You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
And welcome to the College Gridiron 365 podcast for today, Wednesday, June 28th. I'm Brant Parsons with Matt Marshall. And Matt, it's just trugging along. We've got your SEC players to watch, part of your off-season stuff. We're going to talk about that later on in the podcast. We're going to start off with some business side news. And I will say this, Matt, this time of year, I would rather talk business side stuff than talking about what we usually talk about this time, player arrests and players getting in trouble. And at least, you know, knock on wood, it hadn't been a lot of that so far this summer. But the ACC Network in the news this week, and they got a big, not I'll say a break, but a positive move going forward in order to become a reality in the time frame they want to be up and running.
Yeah, they did this week. Sports Business Journal reporting that the ACC Network had reached a deal with a distribution channel, so, you know, some cable company or satellite company, agreeing to carry their network at some point. It's the first step, obviously, in a big process. And you know, ESPN wouldn't say which company that was, but it's still big news because, you know, we're talking about a network that still isn't officially off the ground yet. Won't make its debut until reportedly, you know, 2019. And there's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of months of whether or not, because of the changing landscape and, you know, the television markets, with ESPN cutting the cord, with ESPN losing subscribers, so to speak, and having people cutting the cord, there was some concern that this network may not get off the ground. And I know when we spoke with, you know, many of the coaches and athletic directors in the ACC back in May at the spring meetings, everything seemed to be going ahead, you know, with no sort of concern. Obviously, they feel like that this is going to happen. This announcement this week seems to be cement that a little bit, you know, allowing that, knowing that, you know, fans could actually watch this network on some sort of channel. I'm sure over the next, you know, 6 months or so, we're going to hear more of these deals, probably actually hear who's going to carry the network. But it is huge for them because, again, this is a conference that desperately wants to get its own channel, desperately knows that it can make a lot more money and revenue once it does gets its channel off the ground, and you know, sees what happens with the SEC network, the Big Ten network, the Pac-12 network, and really wants to jump in and get a piece of that pie. So they desperately want to get this channel up. It's whether or not they can get it up before the television market landscape changes dramatically in the next couple of years.
And that's what I was going to say, is all signs are pointing. This is one of the last chances, I think, maybe at least under this current business model of these cash grabs and these money makers, as you touched upon it, ESPN, we've seen the cutbacks they've had to make, the changes they've had to make because of the people cutting the cord. Fox Sports this week with a huge change. At least affects, we see it with those in our industry, but moving away from all writers on their staff, getting rid of every writer on the Fox Sports staff because they want to just put their money towards video because they don't have money to throw around. And these conference contracts, they're settled in for a few years, but as you said, in a couple of years when the Big Ten, I think, is the first one to come up, the money that they're getting now may not be there, or it may not be there in the form that they've been seeing it. So you can understand why the ACC wants to get in on this before that ship has completely sailed. Because in a couple years, I don't think you'll see deals like this as plausible, just because, as you said, just the changing landscape of sports on TV and cable television, and especially how it affects college sports. I think we're in the beginning stages of what's going to be a complete makeover, and it's going to look, in 10 years it'll look different than it does right now.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we talk about most of these, you know, let's be honest, the only ones who are really going to get these kind of conference channels are going to be the Power Five. You know, it's only going to be the ACC, SEC, you know, Big Ten, Pac-12. I mean, the Big 12 has talked about it. You know, obviously the decision not to expand kind of impacted that a little bit. We probably won't see that happening. And none of the Group of Five conferences really are going to have that kind of a deal to get in on, you know, to have these kind of channels. And I think in the next, you know, 5-10 years, as you mentioned, I think things are going to change dramatically. I think you're going to see a lot more emphasis on streaming, you know, a lot more emphasis on online sites where, you know, fans can get the content directly to their mobile phones, get them directly to, you know, their tablets, to their computers. I think the television model as we see it is just changing so much over the last 5 years. And as you mentioned, you know, I mean, I don't think the money is going to nearly be as there like it used to be. So I think a lot of these conferences right now are hoping to get themselves locked in for a while. And I think that's what the ACC wants to do. I mean, they're spending a lot of money right now, each into these individual schools to upgrade their you know, video facilities, you know, so they're able to produce content at the schools themselves and feed it to the network. So, you know, there's a lot of money being invested in this from the ACC perspective, and there's a lot being invested by each of its members. So they definitely want to make sure this gets off the ground. And this is a good first step, it appears to be, from the news announced this week.
And speaking of money, Matt, a story that stuck out to me. Kansas Jayhawks football, owners of one conference football win in the past 2 years, $300 million that their athletic director has pledged to spend towards upgrades and towards the football program and the stadium and everything in it. That's, I believe, I don't have the story in front of me, but I believe it's like 3 or 4 times the athletic budget. Just an insane amount of money going into that. To that program and to the stadium, I think. But this is normal. But when even schools like you know, if Ohio State said something like this, you'd be like, yeah, okay, Ohio State's going to upgrade, you know, whatever else they're going to upgrade. But a school like Kansas, not known for its football, a basketball powerhouse, obviously, but the money is being spent in football, and we've seen it over and over again, and that money is still there now. But it seems to be what teams and schools are doing is trying to use that money now to build up their facilities so they're prepared for whatever comes next in this crazy college football business world.
Yeah, it really is. You mean, you talk about, you know, Kansas Memorial Stadium. Last year, I think they had maybe a 52% capacity. You know, again, Kansas football is not at its peak right now, trying to get itself back under, you know, Coach David Beatty. But, you know, this is nothing unusual now. If you look at the landscape in college athletics, especially at the FBS level, you know, there are a lot of schools who spent a lot of money over the last couple of years, you know, trying to upgrade their facilities. They realize that if they want to keep fans in the seats, you know, they've got to make sure that there's a comfortability factor there. They got to make sure that the concessions work. They got to make sure that, you know, the Wi-Fi is some of the best, you know, around. They got to make sure that they're cutting edge. And, you know, if you're 5 years behind on your upgrades, you're going to lose fans, because especially now, as we mentioned earlier in this podcast, you know, with television markets and television networks and streaming and everything, there's more options for fans not to have to go to a football game. You know, you don't have to necessarily be in the stands to experience the game. In some cases, fans don't necessarily want to go to the game. So it's kind of a catch-22. You got to get the fans in the seats. You got to get them to spend the money on the tickets. But to do that, you got to spend some money. So I'm sure in the case of Kansas, this money will be spread across, you know, the next, you know, decade or so, and we'll use some of their you know, newfound Big 12 money. You know, they announced that each school is going to get something like over $34 million in its media right payouts. So I'm sure that will help out as well. But again, you know, we're seeing this all over the state. We're seeing money being pumped into facilities. I mean, down the road in Miami, you know, the Hurricanes are going to be in the process of building their new indoor practice facility. You know, that was big. You know, Florida just just finished up its football practice facility, indoor practice facility, and they're now looking at producing over $100 million, you know, upgrades to the building football facilities even more. So as we go on, and as the Power Five and autonomous conferences continue to rake in the money, they're going to continue to make the upgrades that they need to make to be able to compete in this, the push for the college football playoff national championship.
And as I teased at the start of this podcast, this is part of our off season, and you're providing great content nearly every day. And you put out on Tuesday, the players to watch in the SEC, and just looking over this list, and it's kind of going to be a who's who of the guys we're going to see a lot of this coming football season. Guys coming back like Nick Chubb, new guys to the conference like Jarrett Stidham, Malik Zaire, and of course, guys that a lot, you know, the whole national picture rests upon, like Jalen Hurts. But really, just going over this list for the SEC, it's no secret that it's one of the best, if not the best, college football conferences out there, and they certainly have the players. And I'm impressed you were able to trim the list down to as many as you did, because I know there's a lot of guys out there. But when you made the list and when you look over the SEC, what are some of the guys, what are some of the things that stuck out to you coming up with players to watch this season?
Well, I think the big thing is, as you mentioned earlier, was the, you know, this idea that there are two big name graduate transfers coming in, and Jarrett Stidham at Auburn and Malik Zaire at Florida. I think there's going to be a lot of attention paid to those two guys. They're going to see if those guys can step up and help their programs, you know, possibly, you know, get to the next level, especially at Auburn, you know, with Jarrett Stidham, a guy who was highly recruited out of Baylor, spent his freshman season there, and then decided to transfer when everything kind of went down there at that school, lands at Auburn at a school where Gus Malzahn, you know, quite frankly, over the last couple of years, really has struggled to find a quarterback, you know, after Cam Newton left. I mean, he really has, you know, really Nick Marshall was there and did a pretty good job, but, you know, he really hasn't been able to identify a quarterback. And I think you bring in a guy like Stidham, who more than likely I think will win the job when it's all said and done, and you know, has a strong arm, a little bit of mobility. I think he really kind of fits in the offense, and I think, you know, if they can get, you know, the numbers and run up and down the field, I think Auburn's going to try to make a big push at Alabama. And on the flip side of that, we mentioned Malik Zaire. We talked about him in our last podcast, a guy who, you know, definitely is going to be interesting to see whether he gets the starting job, which I think he will eventually at Florida, and how he impacts that as well. But, I mean, up and down outside of those guys, maybe Jalen Hurts at Alabama. I think, again, the SEC is a little weak at quarterback position. I think it's going to be strong at running back. And you mentioned Nick Chubb. There's a guy who, you know, comes back from a horrific injury, puts together a really good, strong season. Now the number two all-time leading rusher at Georgia. I think Georgia's going to have one of the best backfields possibly in the SEC with Chubb and Sonny Michael. Those two guys will definitely be headaches for defenses. You look at a guy like Darius Guice from LSU, you know, a guy who really was the top performer last year despite Leonard Fournette being on that team. And this guy could be even better than Leonard Fournette when you look at his numbers. And then, you know, up and down, you know, this league is strong. We talk about it every year when it comes time for the NFL draft, that the SEC always seems to produce the most players because, you know, at almost every position, there are just amazing All-Americans, you know, whether it's wide receiver Christian Kirk over at Texas A&M or whether it's someone on the line or on the defensive front. This league always seems to produce the top talent, and it's year in and year out.
I think, and you touched upon it, though, it's been amazing to me that the quarterback position has suffered so much in recent years in the SEC. And when we're looking at this coming season, the only returning quarterback that stands out to us is Jalen Hurts, and he's got question marks. You know, he excelled at times last year, but obviously he was young. But it's been a while since the SEC has produced, any sort of consistency at the quarterback position. And the fact that we're talking about two graduate transfers as two of the big stories and possibly the best quarterback in the league when it's all said and done in Stidham, as well as the SEC has been at all the position players and you know, monstrously strong and fast defensive lines and great offensive lines, for whatever reason, the recruiting in the SEC, the development, they have not been developing quarterbacks in that conference the way you would expect compared to the way they're developing all the other guys in that league.
Yeah, and I think some of that can go back to, you know, the offenses that are being run. I mean, it's not like they're way different than, you know, what you're seeing across the country, but, you know, you're looking around at the Big 12. The Big 12 obviously is known for putting up lots of points, lots of yards. You know, quarterbacks thrive in the Big 12. They put up big numbers. You know, just look at Baker Mayfield, for instance, at Oklahoma. I mean, the last 2 years he's been in the Heisman discussion, you know, been a finalist for the Heisman last year. He's put up big numbers. You look at the ACC, you look at Florida State, Clemson, Louisville. Those guys put up big numbers. Obviously, Lamar Jackson, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. I think those offenses are more predicated on the quarterback position, more predicated on using those guys and having those guys step up. Lamar Jackson, you know, was actually, you know, developed by Bobby Petrino. You look at Deshaun Watson, developed, you know, actually, you know, developed by Dabo Sweeney and his staff. I think in the SEC, it's been a little different the last couple of years. And I don't know if it's because quarterbacks, there's such a big push on getting these quarterbacks from these other conferences, or whether it's just that there's been some coaching changes and some of these, you know, schools haven't been able to get a guy in to really develop it. We talked about Florida a couple days ago on the podcast and how, you know, they really haven't developed a quarterback, I would say probably since the Urban Meyer days, you know, when Dan Mullen was the offensive coordinator, you know, and really worked with developing that position. They just, for some reason, they're never able to get, you know, that quarterback go from like freshman to, you know, to all the way through maybe 2 or 3 years. I also think two guys leaving after 3 years has hurt the SEC a little bit. You've seen some quarterbacks leave early. Johnny Manziel, for instance, who kind of was a flash in the pan, so to speak, and then, you know, went off early. For some reason, the SEC hasn't been able to do something with that. I don't know if the graduate transfer rule is going to hurt that even more, because I think you'll see more schools do that. I do think there's some great quarterbacks in this league. I mean, Shea Patterson, for instance, at Ole Miss is a tremendous talent, and is, by all rights, everyone talks about how good he is. Unfortunately, he plays for a team now that is going to be sitting out this season with a postseason bowl ban. So it'll be interesting to see what he's able to do there. They've got to start getting these guys, and they got to start developing them, because eventually what happens is good quarterbacks say, well, I don't want to go to the SEC. I want to go to the Pac-12 or the Big 12 or the Big 10, and play there. And that it's going to hurt the SEC at some point down the road. Although that hasn't hurt anyone. You know, Alabama seems to find a way to continue to win despite having different quarterbacks the last 4 or 5 years.
And to finish the topic, and to finish the podcast, we can't talk about SEC without spending some time talking about Alabama beyond Jalen Hurts and a guy you have on the list, Minkah Fitzpatrick. Just a defensive whiz last season with the interceptions and pick sixes and getting in on tackles and part of that defense. He's the guy you're picking out because he is the best guy on that defense, but that Alabama defense year in, year out, one of the best in the country, and as they go, so does the Crimson Tide, and he's a guy on this list. We spent a lot of time talking about quarterbacks and running backs, but he may be the best athlete on this list, and one of the most important ones when the season comes in, because that Alabama defense, it seems to always carry that team, and it'll start in their secondary this year.
Yeah, and you know that, and it's you know, really it's no surprise when you consider that Nick Saban was the secondary coach, you know, for many years before he became a head coach, and I think he still works with the secondary players, you know, every year, and you know he goes out and he recruits these guys and he gets these kind of players to step in there. What amazes me about the Alabama football program is year in and year out they lose a ton of talent, ton of tremendous talent to the NFL in the draft. And they seem to find guys who they recruit year in and year out that keep stepping into those roles and really become superstars. And I think that's the same situation here. You know, I think Minkah Fitzpatrick is a guy who's probably going to be the top secondary player in the SEC, maybe in the country. And by having that tough secondary, I think that helps him, because you know Alabama's going to have strong players up front on the line. They're going to have a solid linebacking core. They're going to be strong again on defense, despite losing all those players. But it starts with a secondary that's able to shut down quarterbacks. And as we mentioned, there aren't that many strong quarterbacks in this league. So it also helps to have those guys be able to step up and make plays.
That Alabama-Auburn game could be something special when the end of the year comes. If Stidham develops like we think he could against the Alabama secondary, could be a fun way to end the year. But we're not even close to that. We're still in June. And working our way through the summer. Matt, as we tell everybody, subscribe to our podcast, share on social media, get on board. We're going to be doing this a lot leading up to the season and throughout the season. It is the College Gridiron 365 podcast. It is brought to you by OrlandoSentinel.com. And please subscribe, download everything on iTunes and hopefully some other places soon. And we'll be talking again with you very, very soon on the College Gridiron 365 podcast.
The College Gridiron 365 podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brant Parsons and Matt Mershell. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.